to the Creative Pen Podcasts. I'm Joanna Penn, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options, internet sales and promotion for your book. The companion website is www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with a double N. And here's the show.
Hi everyone. This is Joanna Penn for the Creative Pen Podcast, and today I'm interviewing best-selling author Dean Wesley Smith. Dean has written more than 90 popular novels and well over 100 published short stories. He writes under many pen names and has also ghosted for a number of top best-selling writers, as well as writing comics and Hollywood film scripts. Over his career, he has also been an editor and publisher and is currently writing thrillers and mystery novels under another name. Dean has recently been writing the Killing the Sacred Cows of Publishing series, which we're talking about today. So welcome, Dean.
Good to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Oh, and I'm just a little bit intimidated by how many books you've written and how famous you are. So
It's just taken a lot of years. That's the thing. If you just keep doing this for enough time, then eventually you get a large resume, you know, just kind of going around.
That's good to know. So, yes, and when I was telling people on Twitter that you were coming on the show, they were very excited because a lot of people have been reading your blog lately, so that's fantastic.
No hate mail, huh?
No. Okay, so let's start off because, I mean, you've had quite a career. You've done all kinds of books and novelizations and movie things and editing and publishing and things. So what has changed between when you started and now? And is this the best time to be an author?
Oh, in my opinion, I think it's the absolute best time to be an author. I don't think there's any better time. When I started, I sold my first short stories in 1975. To some basically what were called semi-pro zines at the time. And then I couldn't sell anything until 1983. And I was lost in all the myths that I talk about. I was rewriting everything to death. I was, you know, writing very slowly. I wasn't doing anything right until 82. And then I started writing a short story a week thanks to Ray Bradbury. And it just went from there and I started selling. But it was very difficult because there was only one way to go. You had to go into regular publishing, you had to sell to regular magazines, and there was no other options at all. Where now, writers have so many options, it's almost too many to count at this point. And so this is a wonderful time to come into publishing. Mm. Just wonderful.
And what do you say to those people who are still stuck in that old way? I mean, I know you talk about it, and I guess I get a lot of people who are still, you know, younger than you, I would guess. Sorry about that. Yeah. But, you know, who are saying, I can't do this technology. I can't get in with this stuff. You know, why do I have to do all this? You know, what do you say to them?
Well, actually, I don't think you actually have to. As long as you can stay out of some of the problem areas and think things through, like be pretty good at business. You don't have to go into the new technology yet if you don't want to. I have a hunch that in a few years, that'll become the norm, where you are doing your own books as well as selling to traditional publishers, as I call them, you know, the big publishers, whether they're in your country or here in the States. You know, I don't know if that's going to happen. My crystal ball's fuzzy on that one, but I don't know. You can still stay in the traditional publishing world. You got to be careful with agents. You need to be careful with what kind of contracts you sign. But if you're smart at business and keep care of your own money, you can still come in the regular way.
Mm. Yeah, that's interesting you said that about a business, because many authors just say they just want to write books. And clearly you've written a lot of books. But has it always been about looking after your own business and basically running a small business?
Oh, yeah. That hasn't changed. That hasn't changed at all. That's always been the way it is for writers all through history. I'm a fan of the history of publishing. And there's always been the writers who want someone else to take care of them. There's no doubt about that. But by and large, the writers who last a long time, who don't get taken and then get shoved aside, they're the ones that are good at business and keeping track of their own stuff. And they're also the ones that understand that in business, there are often failures. And you have to stand up and keep going. And I can't begin to tell you how many failures I've had over the years, but when you add it all up, all the positives, you tend to forget the failures and have all the positives kind of add up, and it's nice. Because I know business, I know that.
And did you have a day job when you started writing?
I had 3 day jobs. I was bartending at night, 4 nights a week. I was driving school bus both at 5:30 or so in the morning as well as in the afternoons. And I owned my own bookstore at the same time. And that was pretty much it was open 7 days a week, and I was pretty much had to run it myself. So I had I consider when I started writing in 1982. Back before that, I always had jobs, but I wasn't really going at the writing in any kind of serious. I call January 1st, 1982, the time I got serious about writing and started writing a short story a week. And I managed to work that in around 3 jobs. Made a lot of sacrifices, but you know, you get 10 minutes here, 5 minutes here, 20 minutes over here. You know, I miss a rerun of something or a new show, and I would write instead. You know, that's what I did. Just like everybody has to do. No, I was no different than anybody else.
Yeah, no, that's great to hear, because you know, me and many others, we're you know, like you say, fitting in the hours as you do. So that's fantastic. So you reckon it took 7 years before you went kind of pro?
Yes, I actually had my last real-world job, if you don't count editing as a real-world job. I had my last real-world job in 19, actually it was 87. Yeah, 7, you know, it was about 5 and a half years. It wasn't quite 7. It was more like 5 and a half. And then, of course, I immediately made a bunch of mistakes and got sidetracked and went off into editing and other things for a little while. But, you know, it took 5 years before I went freelance.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. Okay, so you've got this brilliant series of blog posts that I've been hooked on, the Killing the Sacred Cows of Publishing. Maybe you could just explain, you know, why you've been writing that and a little bit about it, so for people who might not have read them yet.
Well, to make a real long story short, I got trapped in them early on too, just like all of us do. I don't think there's anybody that can escape some of these. What happened was is that my wife, Christine Catherine Rush, and I started going around and talking to writers groups once in a while. And they used to call it the Chris and Dean Show because it was sort of like a stand-up comedy routine about writing. And what we discovered is that so many writers were lost in the mist that we had sort of forgotten. We had gotten past a lot of them and had forgotten how bad they really were. Mm-hmm. And then over the last number of years, we've been teaching professional writers here on the Oregon coast in the United States on how to basically get past these myths and get their careers going again. These are people who publish short stories, publish novels, and are stuck in one fashion or another, and they want to move forward and move up. And basically what we try to do with them is clear the myths, because no writer is stopped by New York or by any other publishing in the world. Where we're all stopped by is between our ears. That's where the big problem is right up here. And we have huge issues with that. And if we can get by these things that are between our ears and these things that stop each of us, and that's what Chris and I work on, and those we call the myths. And then that's why that series started, was to try to pound home some of those things. And of course, every time I started talking about agents, Laura Resnick helped, because she's really had to deal with some bad agents. I've never had a bad agent. I don't have an agent now, and I probably never will again. Don't need one at this level. But, you know, it's just been really interesting to talk about all the different stuff going on. That's where we start.
Yeah. So where do you think they come from, these myths? Because, I guess, is it because we're readers? Most writers are big readers, and we sort of worship the people who are up here, and then we think we're nothing down here. Is that literally where it comes from? Because no one ever taught me the myths, but I read them and I totally get that.
Yeah, I can even trace pretty accurately where, like, for example, the myth of writing slower is writing better, which is exactly opposite of how the human brain works. If you know how the brain works and how the creative process works, you have to get it out quick to get out of the way. And so that whole myth about writing slower is writing faster started in a series of essays in 1890. It can be traced back to a series of about 20 different essays that the university programs then picked up. And it was just prolonged from there. The idea about rewriting is also a myth created by the university systems and has just been just pushed to death, well, for almost 100 years now, because the university programs, bluntly put, they don't have time to read a lot of stuff. The professors are just too jammed, so that they would rather have their student rewriting the same thing and making it, you know, and quote, polishing it. You know, I love that term, polishing it. When you think about a stone, it's a really unique stone. If you throw it in with a bunch of other rocks and polish it, it becomes just like all the other rocks. And that's not what you want in writing. You want your unique voice, your unique talent to come out. And it doesn't come out if you polish it to death. I mean, I'm not saying you shouldn't fix the mistakes, things like that. You should. But, you know, but past that, trust yourself. Trust your writing and write the next story. You only get better by writing more stories. You don't get better by polishing something that's old. Just the myths come about from everywhere. We're just trained in them.
Yeah.
You know, and right now with the internet and with this kind of communication and technology that we're dealing with even here, it just gets really continuing on. Plus, there's a lot of writers. And Chris and I have really tried now to remember what it was like to break in and how the feelings and the frustrations and the working the day jobs and everything. But there's a lot of writers that will go around preaching, well, this is how I did it, so it's the only way. Boy, that just starts missed because things are changing literally by the moment right now. Everything's changing so fast. So I would never think, oh, you should break in like I did in 1982 and 83. No, not even the same world. So.
Yeah. Okay, so let's just, you know, ask you about these, because you said you talked about hate mail just back then. Have you been getting a big backlash from people who are in the industry around these, you know, killing the myths?
Not the editors and not the agents. The top editors in New York and everything privately behind the scenes to me are saying, thank you. Thanks for trying to clear some of this up and thanks for having the courage to go out and do it. Well, I'm in a unique position. I don't have a career under the Dean Wesley Smith name that I can hurt too poorly, too badly, more than I've already done, you know, over the years. I'm writing all of my big books right now under other names that are very well, that are kept secret. And so I'm in a kind of a unique position with a lot of experience and a lot of editing experience to talk about some of these things sort of bluntly. The first time I heard about the agent issues were way back when I was editing, and I was at Pocketbooks for a little while, and a couple of the editors were standing around talking, and they started laughing about these manuscripts they were getting from this one agent, and they were just throwing them away. They weren't even sending them back. They weren't even bothering. And that was the first time I started realizing that not all agents were created equal, and that there are good agents and bad agents, and the editors in New York are pretty clear on what they like and don't like. Their corporate policy has put the agented submissions only, and that's been a problem. But it hasn't been the editors. They're all thanking me. The agents, by and large, except for a couple of the young ones, have been saying behind the scenes to me that they're glad I'm talking like this. Where I get the most hate mail is from beginning writers.
Really?
Yeah, writers who haven't published anything. Writers that feel that I'm attacking their belief systems and attacking them personally because they believe that they need the agent. They believe that they need these myths to survive and they don't want someone else. And then I've gotten two or three letters from mid-level writers, two or three books in, their careers have crashed. They're very angry at me, mostly because I think what I'm doing is I'm pointing out where they made mistakes and now they don't know what to do. And stuff like that. So, but almost 99% of all the hate mail I get behind the scenes is from beginning writers.
Just
yeah, it's that's really amazing. Yeah, surprised.
Yeah, no, that really surprises me too. Yeah, and I guess I do. It's funny because I talk to a lot of. I'm a beginning writer myself, but I'm an IT person, so I talk to writers about IT and the number of people who go on and on about how they're not interested in all of this technology. You know, it's just amazing. Anyway, what I wanted to, I guess, ask you as well is you're now doing the series on the sort of new world of publishing. That's your sort of counter series, isn't it? Which is kind of maybe a more positive spin. So where's that heading?
Well, actually, I'm not really sure, to be honest with you. I'm just kind of going along with it because this world that we're in right now is like a speeding truck and with no brakes. I don't know where it's going. I don't think anybody who claims they know has any basis to stand on. The new announcements that are coming out almost every day, you know, are changing everything continuously. I really, really think that this series that I'm doing right now is just a way of trying to keep up with me, trying to really keep up with it, as well as come up with ideas. This idea, this latest post about publishing your own stuff first and then putting it out to traditional publishers, that came up on a conversation at a workshop here this last week with a whole bunch of professional writers, and we couldn't punch any holes in it. So I just thought, well, I'll put it up and see if a whole bunch of other people can't punch holes. So far, nobody's really punched any hole in it. Will this be the way of doing it in the future? Maybe. But who knows? I really honestly don't know. Yeah. It's just that this new series is a way of me kind of talking out loud and having a discussion going on about what's happening and seeing where we're going. And plus trying to make some keep some myths under control. I can see some myths starting, and I'm worried about that. I'm worried about some of the myths growing around this area. And so I'm going to try to keep those pounded down with a little hammer, as much as anybody listens to me. So.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. Well, for anyone who didn't read that post, because that's an angle I'm really interested in, maybe you can explain what that said about a way that new writers can get their books to publishers.
Oh, trying to get me more hate mail, huh? basically, what I'm suggesting is for any writer who isn't doing a contract already with a publisher or doesn't have a series going, you wouldn't want to do it with those books at all. Or, you know, a frontlist book, which is basically a big-name author giving the publisher their next book. You wouldn't want to do it with that at all. But anybody who is submitting a book on speculation, who has finished the book, why not go ahead and do a print-on-demand, an actual paper copy of the book? I'm not talking about electronic books. You do that also. But do a print-on-demand copy, which is very cheap these days, and then go ahead and use that as part of your submission package to editors in New York. Not agents, editors. So you would send basically a cover letter, a copy of your book, and like a 2 or 3 page synopsis of the book, and that would be your submission package. And that's the idea that's in that post of why wouldn't this work? And there's some people that have come back privately and online that have said, well, I've been doing that, and it's working. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not finding any holes in the idea now that print on demand has become very reasonably priced. Mm. You know, before it was way too expensive in that old vanity press type of thinking. Mm. It was too expensive.
So do you see that changing then? You know, has self-publishing become independent publishing now in the eyes of the, you know, the people that you socialize with?
Yes. Most of the editors and the people I've been talking to don't have any problem with it. Where they all have a problem is the worry of a good book being put inside of really bad-looking covers. They worry about that. They worry about authors not going the traditional route and allowing the New York publisher's best thing they can do for a writer is a large number of readers fast. They do it very quickly. They do it in a, you know, like a produce, like it's a whole bunch of tomatoes that are going to spoil, so they get it out really quickly and then it's done. Publishing, you can't do that. Self-publishing, small publishing, or, you know, you just can't do that. You have to take the 10-year approach with that. You have to let it grow slowly because you don't, you know, there's no point going out and spending a lot of time promoting or any of that stuff. That's just a waste of time. Just get it out, then write your next book, get it out, write your next book. But at the same time, try to go to New York. So kind of a balanced approach. Didn't see my hands there. Balanced. kind of a balanced approach with you using both methods. And that's kind of the way I think it's going to be for a while now.
Yeah.
But at the same time, New York's going to be in transition here. And all of the world's publishing is in transition. Where, you know, the smaller publishers around the world are having a better go of it. Because they can move quicker, but the big international conglomerate publishers, they're moving very slowly, and that may be some of their deaths. We'll see. Again, time will tell.
And what do you think about the sort of ebook only publishing that some people are talking about now?
I, to be honest with you, I love ebook publishing. As a person with an enormous backlist of short stories and novels, this is just pure gold. This is like running into a shipload of treasure. Because all these stories have been sitting in my file cabinets around this office and downstairs and other stuff, and now they can suddenly start earning me money again. My problem with people only doing e-publishing is that they're only going to, at this moment, 9% of all the readers. And even if it goes to 50% of all the readers, like a lot of people say in 2015, you're still ignoring half of your audience. And why would anybody do that? That makes no sense to me as a logical business when you are aiming your business at only 9% of your possible buyers. That makes no sense to me. So I would say you do the electronic, you do the POD, and also then you try to sell the book into New York. Actually, I'm calling New York now as a loss leader. Is that I sell a book into New York because I write fairly quickly, and then it'll push all my rest of my books because they'll find me a lot of readers very quick. And that'll increase my sales and everything else that I have.
No, that's a great idea. And I mentioned to you before, I'm going to try this route because as a first-time novelist, with not very much to offer, I figured I would try and, go to New York with evidence of sales and evidence of a platform.
Well, even if you don't have any evidence of sales, even if it goes very slowly, that's okay. Just write the next book. Get it up, do the same thing, write the next book. Don't tell them about your numbers. Just if you do a nice package, a nice looking cover on the book, and they open the book and they start liking it. And the other bottom line is when you send a print-on-demand book to a publisher, an editor, they hate throwing books away. They'll never throw it away. So your book will find a home somewhere. It may be through a used bookstore somewhere, but it will find a fan somewhere that will come back and find your other stuff online. So. So it's benefits all the way down the line. You're not really expecting the book to be trashed because the editors will not trash it.
That's fantastic. Now, we have mentioned agents a couple of times. Are you specifically saying now to bypass agents, or what is your recommendation for new authors?
Well, I think that there's, you want to go to the people who can buy your book. So go to editors. Everybody has guidelines about... You can't basically get into New York publishers without an agent. Well, that's just hooey. That's just silly. Because you can go directly to the people. They need to buy books. That's what their job is. And so just go to them. And if they send you back a form letter that says only agented submissions, that means they didn't like what you sent them. But at the same time, if you are smart about your agents and going to agents, then yes, go for an agent if you want to. But most of the agents that are good, the beginning writers can't find. That's really the truth of the matter, is they just can't find them because they're not out there fishing. They're not reading the slush. They're not doing all of that. The beginning agents are just, they don't do you any good. That's the bottom line. As blunt as that is. Oh, that'll get me letters.
Oh, no, that's fantastic. Okay, I've got a couple more questions before we run out of time. You've got this great post on the magic bakery, as you describe it, for fiction authors making money. Maybe you could explain that, because a lot of people have this myth of the poor writer.
Oh, no. Writers make an enormous amount of money. The only people in publishing who are on the Forbes list every year are writers. People don't realize that. One of the things that the magic bakery is just imagine each time you write a short story or a novel, you've created a pie. And that pie can be sliced into as many thousands of parts and pieces as you want. And what's magic about it is often because of copyright. This is all copy. You have to understand copyright to understand how this really works underneath. But you can often take a piece out, sell it to somebody, and the piece will magically reappear in your pie, and you can sell it again. And then you can sell it again. And so, it's great fun that you have this product that will, if you're smart and don't give it away or sign it away, that will make you money and your heirs money 70 years past your end of your life. So your kids and grandkids and everything else will be making money off this one piece of work. Right now, I have stories up that I wrote in 1987 and 86. Well, who'd have thought that 3 or 4 hours that I spent in 1986 would be making me money in 2010 regularly. Mm-hmm. See, that's the magic pie. It's just once I've created it, it's just will continue. And you can sell off the rights, like all the novel rights. And then in 8 or 9 years, you get a reversion and suddenly they reappear back in your pie. And, you know, you can sell thousands of different gaming rights and magazine rights and audio rights. And as thin as you can think of to slice it, and a lot of that stuff just keeps coming right back and reappears. And so your pie is never depleted unless you're silly enough to sell all rights. If you do that, then your pie goes out the door. But, you know, otherwise, if you don't do that, it's just magic. It just keeps making you money forever.
And you clearly have a lot of pies with all your books. And so can I just ask, how fast do you write a novel now?
Well, I'm a moderately slow typist. Frighteningly enough, I never really learned how to type very well. So I'm this do kind of thing. Sometimes two or three fingers, but I'm mostly a finger typist, you know, one at a time. And I'm always looking at the keyboard, and then looking at the screen, and then looking at the keyboard. So I'm not very fast. I probably write what most people do if I'm going, you know, between 500 and 750 words an hour. And the key is that I have a better work ethic than most people. And so does Nora, and so does all the other people, you know, Patterson and everybody else who's very prolific. We have a better work ethic. We just work longer hours. We don't type faster, and we also don't spend much time rewriting. We just write longer hours and then write the next thing and then write the next thing. So being prolific is not a matter of typing fast. It's just a matter of spending more time at it. And that's how I did it. So,
so how many hours a day are you working on writing then?
Right now, not a lot, because I'm playing with this new publishing stuff. But if you counted, for example, in August, I just did a big book that I was hired to do as a ghostwriter. And it was 120,000 words, and I did it in about 20 days. But I was pretty much day and night at it. I mean, I was up in the morning working on it, up in the evening working until I work until 4 or 5, and then I sleep till noon. So, you know, it seems like a tough life, but that's what I do. But I spent an enormous number of hours at it at 500 and 750 words an hour, but I did it in about 20 days. Most people would think that outrageously fast. I just spent the hours.
Yeah. No, that's fantastic. Okay, well, thank you ever so much for your time. So where can people find you and your many books online?
Well, actually, most of my books are under pen names at the moment, although you can still find a lot of the media books and a lot of my short stories and stuff and all the blogs and everything at deanwesleysmith.com. I'm W-E-S-L-E-Y, and it's all one word, deanwesleysmith.com. And come and read the blogs and feel free to comment. If you get too angry at me, I probably won't let it through. You'll have to do that privately, but the comments, read all the comments behind all these blogs. Right now on this new one, there's about 80 some comments, and it's been a great discussion behind the scenes. So yeah, just deanwesleysmith.com.
Thank you ever so much for your time, Dean. That was brilliant.
Well, thank you. It was a lot of fun.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You can get more information on writing, publishing options, sales, and promotion for your book at www.thecreativepen.com, and that's pen with a double N. And you can also get your free How to Be an Author workbook at www.howtobeanauthor.com. See you next time!